From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
As we reported earlier, Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is touring the Persian Gulf. On Monday, he was in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and held a press conference with the Saudi Foreign Minister, Adel Al-Jubeir.
Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I would like to thank my friend, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, for coming here to coordinate our efforts and strengthen our relations between our two friendly countries. This was an excellent opportunity for us to discuss, to further strengthen our relations, which over the past 4 years made good progress. And I mean both investment, trade, the economy, agriculture, space exploration, education, culture. The leadership of our two countries is happy with the way things have been developing and intend to develop our relations further. We discussed student exchange programs. We reaffirmed our commitment to offer scholarships to students from both countries, to promote our ties. We also discussed the situation in the region, the Arab-Israeli conflict, the situation in Syria, Libya, Yemen. We also talked about our joint fight against terrorism. We also discussed rebuilding stability and security in the region. So once again, thank you very much for these talks. And once again, welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to thank my colleague and friend Al-Jubeir and actually all of our Saudi friends for this close cooperation and for determination to develop our ties in line with the agreements that the leaders of our countries reached in October 2017 when King Salman met with President Putin in Moscow, and agreements between the Russian leadership and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman in his numerous meetings with the Russian president. We noted improvements in our trade and economic cooperation. Trade is increasing, although we would like it to grow even quicker. And we discussed a few initiatives related to that, including our plans for the upcoming meeting of our bilateral commission for economic cooperation, which will take place shortly in the Russian capital. We also discussed ways and steps taken by the agencies of our two countries to coordinate new major projects in various areas like energy, peaceful use of nuclear energy, agriculture, transport, and we agreed to continue coordinating our efforts on the international oil market in the OPEC Plus format, which has been quite effective, largely due to the actions taken by Russia and Saudi Arabia. Both our countries are interested in expanding our humanitarian ties and cultural contacts. We want to cooperate more in education. Our both countries are interested in that, and we are grateful to our Saudi friends for taking care of our pilgrims during the Hajj period. Our quota has been increased to 22,000 pilgrims, and security provided by Saudi Arabia deserve our highest appreciation. We also agreed that Saudi Arabia will actively participate in the work of the high-level strategic vision group created by Russia and the Organization of Islamic Cooperation called Russia Islamic World. This group annually has its meetings, and we would welcome a more active involvement of Saudi Arabia in the work of this group. We also discussed the regional issue, of course, especially the Middle East and North Africa, as our top priorities of fighting terror and preventing extremist ideology from spreading. We discussed the situation in Syria, Yemen, and other areas in this extremely important region. We paid special attention to the need of making progress on the Palestinian-Israeli settlement track. The situation has been stagnant recently, and we believe that the only way to overcome this stagnation is by advancing the UN principles of peaceful settlement as part of the two-state solution. We will definitely insist that further efforts are taken based on the UN Security Council resolutions and the Arab Peace Initiative proposed by King Abdullah, the late King Abdullah. I am positive that our talks will promote ties between Russia and Saudi Arabia and will help us achieve the goals set by President Putin and King Salman. Thank you.
Mariana.
Коммерсант newspaper. I have a question for the Saudi minister. Is Riyadh going to reopen its embassy in Damascus, and is Riyadh going to invest in rebuilding Syria, especially territories controlled by the Assad government? Thank you. Thank you very much for your question regarding reopening the embassy in Damascus. It depends on the progress we seek in the political process in Syria. And I already covered this issue a little. As regards rebuilding Syria, it's important for the war there to end. This will be an important step to rebuild stability and security in the country. And of course, together with our Arab brothers, we want to deliver humanitarian aid to Syria. We want this country to continue in its development. So we will continue doing that. I have a question for the Saudi minister. Is there any agreement on the Syrian settlement as regards our agreements? Like we said earlier, we keep talking about this issue and we agree that this problem can only be resolved through diplomatic means. We need stability in this country, which plays such a prominent role in the Arab world. So we hope for the best in this country. Whether we agree or disagree, I'll just say we keep working. We encourage all the parties in the Syrian conflict to show understanding and seek to bring the country out of the current crisis. Thank you. Mr. Lavrov, how much time will it take to put together the list for the Constitutional Committee in Syria? And how much time do you think it will take to reopen the embassy in Damascus? Will you discuss this question at the upcoming meeting of the Arab League as regards our assistance helping the parties in Syria to put together the list for the Constitutional Committee? It's obvious that it's up to the parties in Syria, the government and the opposition, to sort this out. We work together with our Turkish and Iranian partners, encouraging the government and the opposition to work on this list. And this work was almost completed, but then a problem came up. As we all know, this is a totally unrelated issue. Certain difficulties created by our Western partners. And these difficulties now stand in the way of the final approval of this list by the government and the opposition. We remain calm. We will continue pursuing our goal. We still insist that Resolution 2254 has to be implemented, and we should have direct talks conducted by the people of Syria and controlled by the people of Syria. It's hard for me to give you a definite timeline, but this work is taking place, and I hope that soon we'll see it completed. By the way, I would like to take this opportunity to thank our Saudi friends. Today, through the mouth of Al Jubeir, they reaffirmed their commitment to motivate the opposition groups located in the kingdom to help with the political process. I would like to confirm that we do not have any changes in our position on reopening the embassy in Damascus. And as far as rebuilding is concerned, it's a bit of a premature question. We still need to work on that, including together with the other members of the Arab League. Question for Minister Lavrov. We see reports about France's initiative to have preliminary elections in Syria to reform the constitution and also there's a question about arms deliveries by Saudi Arabia related to the conflict in this country. Well, if it's you're referring to an initiative by France regarding preliminary election, that was the translation I heard. I don't know what you're talking about. We have a clear understanding, which has been approved by all the key players, influencing the settlement in Syria. We all agree that our primary objective is to create the Constitutional Committee. If certain countries who tried slowing down or creating difficulties for this process come up now with alternative proposals, that's between them and their conscience. I don't think this will help. This will serve the interests of the Syrian people, will help us serve an inclusive political process led by the UN. On arms deliveries, I didn't get the question. If you repeat your question or rephrase it, I may be able to figure out what you're referring to. As regards the arms deal involving Saudi Arabia, the suspended deal, we have agreed to review this, the details of this deal. And actually, the Canada government is still interested in this deal happening, but statements made by certain members of the Canadian government. We can't take them seriously. I have a question for Minister Lavrov. Talks between Palestinians and Israelis without any preconditions. You proposed having a meeting in Moscow. Has there been any progress on this initiative? Any new developments in the Palestinian-Israeli settlement? Well, a couple of years ago, the Israeli leadership contacted us with this idea. We talked to the Palestinian leadership. We discussed the possibility of having a meeting between the leaders of Israel and Palestine in Russia without any preconditions. The Palestinian leadership is ready for such a meeting. The Israeli leadership is still interested in this matter, but they're not sure about the timeline. So we are still ready. With this initiative, which is not actually ours, the original initiative came from Israel. We would be ready when both parties can coordinate a specific date. Now, as regards your more general question about new developments in the Palestinian-Israeli settlement, unfortunately, all I can say is all the new developments are negative. Because obviously we see attempts to undermine everything that has been done so far. I'm referring to the UN Security Council resolution, the UN General Assembly resolutions, the Arab Peace Initiative. According to the Arab Peace Plan, the Palestinian problem had to be resolved based on the two-state solution, Palestine and Israel, which live safely side by side in peace with their neighbors. And after that, all states in the League of Arab Nations, they all said they would be ready to normalize relations with Israel. I think this is extremely important. And we actively supported the Arab Peace Plan, which was put forth, like I said earlier today, by the late King Abdullah. Currently, we see attempts to overturn this initiative and first have normalization between Arab states and Israel, and then after that consider whether something could be done for the Palestinians. We pointed out that our U.S. partners working on the so-called deal of the century, when asked directly, started saying that they're not trying to undermine the two-state solution, yet we have reasons to believe that such statements, well, at least we have to verify them. Let's see what the final plan eventually looks like. But we are convinced, and this is what we discussed with our Saudi friends today, is that the Arab Peace Plan should remain as it was put forward in the first place. You can't use the Palestinian problem to play with it against existing agreements, against what has been achieved in the UN and as part of direct contact between the two parties. We need a fair solution to the Palestinian problem, among other things, to counter the trend of extremism spreading in the Arab world. This is a very serious matter, and I hope that those directly involved in this work are aware of the special responsibility on their shoulders for any decisions they are about to take and the consequences that such decisions might have.
Noor Nagri from Arab News, Minister Lavrov, I do have a question. You said that you were talking about developing nuclear energy with Saudi Arabia. Can you elaborate more on this, and what did you reach, what you put on, and if you have anyone? Also, Mr. Adil Jubair, if you'd like to add anything.
Saudi Arabia has a peaceful nuclear program, and under this program there is a tender to build nuclear facilities, and Russian government corporation Rosatom takes part in this tender, in this contest. It passed the first round, and now it's in the second round of this tender. I hope that the experience that Russian nuclear specialists have accumulated over the years and the high level of safety that Russian nuclear companies can ensure will be properly appreciated by our Saudi friends. I think Mr. Minister gave a full answer to your question. As regards this intentions by Saudi Arabia to develop peaceful nuclear energy, we certainly want to get the best possible technology and a high level of safety. So we'll keep moving in this direction. Thank you.
As Black Agenda Radio reports this week, the South American nation of Venezuela has held more elections in the past 20 years than any other nation in the Western Hemisphere and, perhaps, the entire world. But corporate media and both political parties in the U.S. insist that Venezuela's socialist government is a dictatorship. The U.S. has seized billions in Venezuelan assets, and the Trump administration is now threatening military action. Afia Nwangaza is a lawyer and director of the Malcolm X Center for Self-Determination in Greenville, South Carolina. Nwangaza was among the international observers who verified Venezuela's elections as free and fair, and spoke with Black Agenda Radio's Glenn Ford.
Not only do I take this position, but former President, U.S. President Jimmy Carter, also takes the position that Venezuela has the most transparent and cleanest elections of any country in the world. So much so that the Carter Center almost doesn't even bother about going anymore because that description has not changed. When I participated as in the observer delegation last May, which happened to be Malcolm X's birthday weekend, I was utterly amazed at the transparency, the access, and the certification process. We know that the first thing that we experienced was the opportunity to examine the hardware. The hardware was designed in collaboration with Venezuelan engineers and Chinese manufacturers. The software was the same thing. They showed us exactly, piece by piece, how it worked. When we go looking at the software has internal safety measures and checks and has a verification process that any citizen can walk off the street in his or her polling place and demand not only an audit, but also demand an examination and certification of the software as his or her vote is being processed, ballot is being processed. I want to go to access. In this country, we know voter suppression is an industry in and of itself. In Venezuela, it's just the opposite. The government takes every effort to make sure that folk are able to vote. In fact, when someone turns 18 years old, they are automatically registered and eligible to vote. And that, I would point out, is without regard for one's, for lack of a better term, criminal punishment status. Further, all candidates have an equal amount of free time on media, television, radio. Print is different because print is privately owned. The all campaigning on that level ends 2 weeks before the election. So we have voters having ready automatic access to the polls, the franchise. We have candidates having full, unfettered, uncostly, free access to the public through the media. And on the day of the election itself, there are polling places everywhere. The only place that I saw a line to vote was on the military bases. In the neighborhoods, people come in, they identify themselves, everyone has their identity card. They present their identity card. The first machine has their thumbprint, which is electronically attached to their identity card, and a picture of them and their identity card appears in response to their thumbprint. So it's very clear that the person who is voting is the person who is supposed to be voting. They go from that station to the next station where essentially the same process occurs, and they sign themselves into the polling place. They go from that station to the ballot itself, which is a combination of pictures and lettered narrative. And it really reminded me very much of our voting literacy program in the South during the 60s, especially in Lowndes County, where the Black Panther was used as the symbol to not only to embody the spirit of the campaign, but also to overcome the high illiteracy rate of the community with which we were dealing. So you have that same kind of concern and solution in Venezuela. Once the ballot has been marked, and here the people actually, they vote for the party as opposed to voting for the individual. But once they have cast their ballot, then the ballot prints out a receipt, just like you get at an ATM machine. Then that receipt is compared with, you can compare it with what your recollection is of how you voted and whether or not it's reflected in the process as represented by the receipt. Here in South Carolina, we have a paperless system where even elected officials have objected to having cast a vote, chosen a candidate, and another candidate's name come up. This has gone on for at least the past 20 years without change. And now the Republican administration, and it's not limited, frankly, to the Republicans or the Democrats, to the Republicans, because the Democrats are no better, had said, okay, we're going to change the machines because they're old, they're malfunctioning, and we need the money to change the system with a paper ballot, to have a paper, at least a receipt, so that we can go back and look. See if it's for consistency. Now, last week, they've announced that they can't do that because they don't have enough money to do that, but they're so concerned about democracy, right? In Venezuela, at the end of the day, the managers and the polling managers must take a tally of the signatures. They must take a tally of the thumb imprints. They must take a tally of the ballots themselves. They must take a tally of the outcome of the ballots. All of this is done in full public view. You can stand there right beside the poll managers and watch everything they do, not from across the room, right beside them. All of those tallies must match. If they do not match, they have to go through the process all over again. And any citizen in that polling place can say, I don't like what that looks like. I want to see this section of it, or I want to see the whole thing. And it has to be redone. Now, in the United States, you can't even get to where they tally the votes.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.